Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. It's the halfway through the month of October, the 16th of October, 2018, as we wind up the month.
It's the median of the month. Not the average, not the mean, but the median.
Yeah, that would be the median.
That would be the median. How's it going out there? How's the weather?
Right now, it was kind of warm all day, and then the nice fog kind of rolled in and cooled things off. It's probably around 69, 70 degrees.
And does it get much hotter or colder? Because we're talking that you don't actually have central air or central heating in your house.
No, I use, we don't need, nobody in their right mind, especially if you're living right across from the Golden Gate, ever needs air conditioning. I mean, a fan maybe twice a year. I use a slant fin for my heating, which is a boiler in the basement, and it sends up, it's like radiators all over the house, only they're high tech.
Does it start clinking and clanking once you start it going?
No, there's none of that. You can't bang it with a hammer, or it's not a big funky looking thing either.
Really?
And it gives you a nice kind of a very pleasant warmth, which a lot of people prefer to like central heating, blowing a bunch of dirty hot air all through the house.
You're coming in pretty hot here.
Oh, I can turn it down.
Nope, I got it. I'll take care of it on my side. And I look like I'm coming in a little bit light. There we go. I'm better. Anyway, let's give a quick update of what's going on with the markets, because there's been a lot going on. As a matter of fact, I wish we could have done the show yesterday, because I had all sorts of things to talk about with regard to some of the levels that we've seen in the oversold areas and all that. But basically, an entire gigantic, massive sinkhole opened in the middle of the markets.
Yeah.
I mean, Dow Jones dropped more than 1,000 points on the
week. I was hoping my Adobe short was going to pay up, and instead it did a zigzag, and I ended up getting closed out. And
I don't know if it closed out yet. It did more of a loop-de-loop.
Yeah, well.
That's because of the announcement last night. After the close last night, Adobe came out with the announcement that they were reaffirming their outlook and their guidance and their year and raising this and doing that, and it was all sorts of good news and excitement on that.
Well, good for them.
Yep. But yeah, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 1,000 points. 850 points on Wednesday alone, which is, even though it's a lot higher than it was, kind of reminds you of those times back in 2008 when things were swinging around as the Treasury and the Fed were trying to get a handle on the imminent collapse of the markets. It was pretty ugly. And if you remember last week, we were talking about how the underlying stocks within the indices were really not holding up very well. But yet at the same time, the indices were only down slightly. And there was two different ways that this could resolve itself. It could resolve itself with a significant drop that if the top layer cracks, like I think we mentioned a sheet of, you know, a pond frozen over in thin ice. Or that could be one, or it could resolve higher. So it obviously resolved to the downside. The VIX spiked to 28 and settled in the week near 21. Today it closed in at 18. So the VIX shorts are back on it. Markets rallied today. I think it was up 530 points on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 2% on the S&P 500. Small caps are up 2.89%. And the NASDAQ was up close to 3%, and probably would be better even better tomorrow. We'll get to this in a second after the Netflix earnings came out. But what we saw was a couple of things that were really interesting, my friend. We saw the S&P, the NASDAQ hit their 200-day moving averages. They were kind of probing that, trying to hold it after being above their 100, above their 50 forever, it seemed.
Yeah, it was weird.
And all of a sudden, this giant moved down. Everybody was, oh, it's the Fed's fault. Because we had interest rates that started to rise pretty significantly after the CPI numbers, after the jobs number. And then President Trump was all about, oh, they're going to ruin everything. They're going to ruin the party. The Fed's raising too fast. Said again today. His biggest fear. What's his biggest fear? It's that the Fed is raising rates too fast. No longer is it Mueller. No longer is it North Korea. Nope. It's the Fed is raising rates too fast. So, but we had this broad-based sell-off, and it was kind of funny. I don't know if you watched the news, but all the talking heads are like, yeah, we were looking for this. Like, what? What are you talking about? You guys are all bullish. You didn't talk about any of this. They're like, yeah, we were, you know, this is going to create a good buying opportunity. You know, now valuation was, you know, really in good shape. We looked at 17 and a half times forward, and now we're at 16, 15.8, and what a great time. And these are things we were definitely looking for this. We were positioned well for this, which kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, I'd say.
So the question is, and this I wrote this the latter part of the day yesterday, the question to ask you is this a time to buy, or is there a retest of the lows possible?
Well, I know why you're asking me, but I will say that I have looked at the shadow stats numbers for the GDP.
Yeah.
And you've seen that, my commentary on that, which makes it seem as though we haven't even seen the market move yet. I'd probably suggest buying. I think Trump's going to be able to keep these balls in the air throughout the midterms and maybe all the way to 2020.
Hmm. Well, all right. So we got a time to buy. I would think that there is the possibility now that you get everybody back in and, you know, everybody was nervous for a while. They freaked out. Then they ran back in. And maybe it's because some of the programmed buying came back into the markets today. Remember that we're in this blackout period for some stocks. And it's possible some programmed traders were buying for those stocks that maybe have cleared, possibly. Because today was interesting. What we saw today was like what we saw a couple months back or a month back. That every single small drop in the market on a day that looked strong was bought. You saw a tick down, it was bought. So a little bit more of a tick down, it was bought. As opposed to last week, you couldn't get a buyer. Out of nowhere, it was like there was no buyers.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that could happen again, of course.
So here's some things that I thought were interesting to take note of.
What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think we possibly could retest the lows. Let me tell you a couple of things that are going on here. So I definitely see an oversold condition that was pretty significant. As a matter of fact, according to, you know, that dial that we have that you go, hogwash to, you know, the oversold and overbought that we calculate internally here.
Yeah.
You know which one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so, the one I always think is bullcrap.
It's just, but you do like the colors. The colors are good. So what is interesting is it was one of the biggest levels of oversold that we reached on Friday since the day before the election. And that was a great buying opportunity. So that's interesting. The Spearman indicator at levels that we don't often see and usually would consider to be bottoming signs. The McClellan indicator hit its lowest since February, the lowest since the February 18th bottom. We saw stocks making new 52-week highs, hitting its lowest since 2018. The stocks
isn't the McClellan an oscillator?
It's an oscillator based on advanced decliners.
Okay,
and there's a couple different ways of calculating it, but it's basically the advanced decliners from the New York Stock Exchange index. What else do we have? Oh, the S&P 500 stocks under their 200-day moving average hit its lowest in years, or in other words, hit its highest level of stocks underneath their 200-day moving average. And at the same time, analysts are still anticipating 21% increase in earnings per share or earnings per share growth for the quarter as compared to a year ago. So there you go. That's all the things that would lead you to believe that maybe we saw a bottom. A lot of contrary indicators going on there. A lot of levels that would persuade a lot of investors to consider dipping their toes in. So now the question then is, why the hell did we have this whole market route to begin with?
Ah, Now you're talking.
Right? So now we know, okay, we had this route. Here's some of the things that may be some buy signals, or at least near-term buy signals. And particularly this, again, I wrote a lot of this the latter part of yesterday. Some of this, we do this on Tuesday, so I can't talk about this till today. And obviously the market did react well. Not that I'm giving myself a slap on the back here or a pat on the back. But
you'd rather have done it yesterday where you could brag about it on Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. Like Wimpy.
Yeah.
Gladly have a hamburger today and pay you on Tuesday, whatever. So why'd the markets
take your word for it.
Believe me. So why all of a sudden markets getting volatile? So we had rates shooting higher. And they went higher on the 10 and the 30, et cetera, beyond the levels that there was this kind of line in the sand that was built. That, okay, we're okay with, you know, interest rates moving higher. But we had a skew event. And a skew event is the speed at which the rate of change of something occurs that could actually... So, for example, if we have rates creeping up slowly over time, it's the old frog in the, you know, the boil frog discussion.
Yeah.
It goes up over time, okay. You know, markets get used to it over time. But all of a sudden, if we get a skew event like we had where we saw rates shoot up dramatically, people freaked out. Makes borrowing more difficult, slows the economy. So now we're starting to see finally a lot of discussion on this pull forward effect that I've been preaching about. A lot of them are calling it front-end loading or front-loading the GDP from manufacturing, et cetera, because, mm-hmm. you know, for the tariffs. So the other thing is that there was concern that the longer the tariffs are in place, the more damage they'll do to the global growth story. Then the final two things that happened that really, I think, sparked all this was that we saw that several companies, I think about six or seven companies that reported on the front part of the earnings season, came out with really soft guidance for the next quarter, blamed tariffs, blamed the US dollar, blamed all sorts of different things that people were like, oh my gosh, is this gonna flow into the entire earnings season? And then the IMF and World Bank downgraded global growth. So you kind of put that all together and people freaked out. You got higher rates, you got a slowing economy, you got economic activity is strong, but what happens if they're pulling it forward? You know, all of a sudden we're seeing when we shouldn't, you know, I was thinking that we'd start seeing it the first quarter, not this quarter. A lot of, companies that were reporting very concerned. So, you know, that I think that's really what happened there. And then people just freaked out.
Well, the freak out is over.
Yep. Snap your finger, it's over. But I do think that there is the potential for us to ride up a bit more, get more confidence back in the market, especially if we see some decent earnings and good guidance, and then possibly retest those lows again.
Well, we do have the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me, although it's not a great opportunity, but it looks like it might be, if you look at it from different perspectives, for a head and shoulders. Because we had the market peak at 26.7, and then it went up to 26.8. And then if it doesn't get past 26.8, the Dow Jones, I'm thinking, on this next run-up, like it goes back down after that, which would be your prediction, I think that would be a bad sign.
Yeah, if we can't break out to new highs or at least hold for a reasonable period of time, and if, in fact, some of the recent earnings that made people feel a little bit better don't hold, or if we did see better numbers out of China after some choppy numbers. We are seeing, by the way, do you remember when the tax plan came into play and there was a discussion that rates are going to be reduced significantly and that's going to bring much more money into the government in terms of tax receipts?
Yeah.
That's not happening. If you look at the numbers and you look at the deficit, we're running about a $700 billion deficit already.
Huh.
And that's going to be going up a lot higher.
For my tax returns, it's happening, but that's another story.
Yeah. And China, at the same time, recorded a record trade surplus of $34.13 billion with U.S. in September.
Yes, I saw that. I thought that was, if anything's amusing, I thought that was it.
Yeah, the reason is because everybody was trying to get in before the tariffs.
Yeah, your front-loading theory.
Yep. All right, so what do we see here? Tonight, one of the things that happened was, yesterday I mentioned we saw that Adobe came out after the close, after things were starting to tick down pretty well. Markets tried to hold yesterday, but just couldn't do it for the most part. But I think small caps were doing well yesterday, but everything else kind of got kerplunked a little bit. Adobe comes out and reaffirms guidance. Everybody's all happy about that. And that kind of helped to instill some confidence in the tech sector today. That started the rally off this morning. And it continued throughout the day. We saw Goldman Sachs report. We saw Morgan Stanley report. And we'll get to this in a second. But banks have been in the no-touch zone for a while now. Really bad. But Netflix rallied after their earnings. It beat by 21 cents, which is a pretty substantial beat considering their... the expectations. They had inline revenues, which, by the way, were historically high revenues for the company. But they guided fourth quarter EPS below consensus, which could be some sandbagging. The subscriber growth was very substantial, and the growth was great. As a matter of fact, domestic streaming is now at 56.96 million. International streaming subs are at 73.5 million. Million. Now, the question is also, when we look at these, how many of these are free accounts that kind of roll? You know, take the 14-day free or whatever it is, or the month free. And they're going to start breaking that out, I think, in the next report. IBM reported stock sinks. Oh, by the way, Netflix was up about 11.5% after the close. IBM reported the stock went down, blaming strong U.S. dollar, which is, you know, they started the constant currency nonsense again. And CSX, the transportation company, you know, the train line.
Oh, yeah. That's Bill Gates' one.
Is it?
I think Bill Gates has, he's not the owner, but I think he has action in that in response to Buffett, his buddy's action in Burlington Northern.
He really is chummy with that fellow, isn't he?
Oh, they love each other. Yeah, they're bridge partners.
It's like a bro fest.
Yeah.
By the way, Paul Allen passed away this week.
Yes, he did.
The brains behind Microsoft. He was the...
Well, initially.
Initially, okay. All right. Well, that's good enough. But he died 65 years old from, was it leukemia?
No, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's had it. He got it first in 84. That's when he broke up with Bill as partners because they felt that Bill and Ballmer were trying to steal his money. And then he recovered from that and then went on his merry way. And then he got it again a few years ago, I think 2009, had a recurrence. I think it was slightly different. And then he pushed that aside completely and it seemed to be cured. And then he got it again. And then that this third time got him.
No good. Well, with all the market, the markets being in quite the disarray, what was interesting to watch was finally, gold got a bid. You know, you have these hedges that I mentioned, I think last week or so, that a lot of them weren't working.
I was thinking about gold the other day myself, but now I'm interested to see what you have to say.
Well, we saw that the dollar started coming down a bit, you know, and then there was that fear factor that was put out there. So gold bounced off the 1180 line, that was about 1184 was that support line, and rallied all the way to 1232, which is a pretty good move for gold considering, you know, it's been down pretty well. I mean, it still has to get above like 1270, 1275, give or take, to make it really something of consequence. But... I mean, I do think there is the potential for the dollar to move lower. And that, I don't know if we could talk about this a little bit. There's a theory that I have.
Oh.
And it's this, that a lot of the problems that we've seen in the markets over the last year have been due to the fact that the U.S. dollar has been rising. That's really been hurting and dismantling a lot of the emerging market and non-U.S. based economies. And in particular, emerging markets. So I was wondering, well, what would it take to bring investors back to the emerging markets for, you know, with some real confidence that they would want to invest there? because as the dollar is going up, a lot of your investments in those local currencies are going down, and they're really a problem. Also, emerging markets, a lot of China in there, and then their currency has been moving lower as well. What would it take for the U.S. dollar to go down? You know, even, you know, considering we have all of this rate hikes and the, you know, the potential for tightening, that's dollar positive. A good economy here and GDP that's dollar positive. You know, of all these things that are going on that have been dollar positives. So I started thinking, well, what it would be is if the deficit continues to balloon the way it is, and that's a significant negative for the dollar. Any currency that any currency for a country that has a ballooning deficit, it's a currency negative. On top of that, if in fact the ratings agencies say, you know, you're in line for a ratings downgrade if you can't get this under control. Your tax receipts are awful. Your deficits keep on going with your defense spending, your lack of, you know, bringing in any kind of substantial tax to pay this off, and your spending continues to widen. If there is a scare that U.S. sovereign will be downgraded like it was a number of years ago, that would really do a number on the currency, which would probably cause a lot of problems around the world, but would really benefit, I think, emerging markets.
Well, so your bet on emerging markets would be that the dollar gets down. I didn't know that they downgraded or upgraded the dollar itself.
Not the dollar. The dollar, they'll downgrade the sovereign debt, the bonds. They
downgrade the debt.
Yeah. Like our treasuries, treasury bonds.
That's not going to happen.
It happened once before.
Just because it happened. When was this?
2012, I think. 2014?
I think there was I'm not buying it.
All right.
If it does happen, yeah, you're right. But I'm just not seeing that they're going to do that.
Well, even if they don't, even if there isn't a downgrade, if we continue on this rate, right now we have a $779 billion
deficit. This is not good.
No, it's not.
I'm not going to argue about that point.
And if the Fed slows down a bit, there's a chance for the dollar to come down, at least reasonably stop the idea that it's going to continue rising forever, because that's what I think was in the mind of a lot of investors.
You know, what it should do is stabilize. I'd like to see it stabilize at $1.15, which is, I think is what it is right around now, euros. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The yen has a lot to do with it also, but I think if the dollar can stabilize, I agree with you, the emerging markets have a shot here. I mean, and not only that, I just wrote about this in our quarterly commentary that I sent out to everybody. I think I sent one to you as well. In there, there's some discussion about how when you look at the beginning of this year, when a lot of people are looking at the spread of valuations for U.S. stocks and emerging markets, it was pretty wide. It is the widest that I've seen in a very, very long time, making the valuation proposition for emerging market stocks much more reasonable if there's a catalyst like a stabilization of the dollar. So take a look at those options there.
All right.
All right. So there's a couple of other things on here. Banks.
So anyway, what do you think about gold just as an investment?
I think it's interesting. It's you know, everybody was, I think there's a lot of people saying that gold was dead because of all the Bitcoins and the cryptos.
Yeah, they always say that.
So I think gold is a good hedge if we have an inflationary environment. Again, if the dollar comes down as well, that would be very good for it. So gold is not unreasonable.
What's silver?
Silver, everybody thinks, is a good hedge with a not only a value proposition in terms of the actual, you know, holding it and a material, I have a material object, but silver also has industrial use.
Yes.
So there is always
so been, is gold to a lesser extent.
To a lesser extent. So all the silver bugs are always talking about, well, silver has all these great, you know, benefits because it's also used in industrial process and all sorts of areas use it, and it won't stop doing that. It's not just a material hedge.
Yeah. So what about platinum?
Platinum's been in pretty good shape. Had been in pretty good shape.
I think platinum is undervalued.
And there's palladium. There's nickel. What about nickel? Yes.
Nickel. Yeah, I don't know what you use. What do you use nickel? Well, nickel for the batteries, maybe, but most of the new batteries are lithium, so the nickel's kind of falling by the wayside nickel. For batteries.
Yeah. And you got copper. Yeah, chat room's talking about copper.
Yeah, but copper's copper. That's a building material as far as I'm concerned. That's on a different track.
Yeah. I would probably say that gold is the most reasonable one to buy. It's the most liquid. You could buy it through ETFs, which I'm not a real fan of. If you want to buy gold coins, I know
there's a gold place down the corner where I live.
Yeah, pick up some coins. Yeah,
buys and sells it, you know, whatever it weighs, kind of thing.
I have several 1980s, like 1982 through 1987 Chinese pandas in perfect condition.
I think I have one panda.
Yeah. Those are worth most of
them. It's a very pretty coin.
Very pretty coin. They have good numismatic value. And I just like saying that word, by the way. Something about that word. It's a smart person's word.
Yeah, it is.
Numismatic. That and just juxtaposition. I think it's juxtaposed.
Good word.
Banks, take a look at these. These are pretty interesting. These two charts, these tables over on DH Unplugged, episode number 427. You find this on the show notes. So this is take a look at these U.S. banks. So the first column there is the five-day return as of yesterday.
I see a lot of red.
A lot of red. But there's a five-day return in banks and financial institutions from yesterday. But look at the monthly and the year-to-date return on some of these. Like Morgan Stanley down 17% year-to-date. State Street, 16%. I mean, we saw some ones that are, you know, Capital One's down 8%. Bank of America down 5%. Actually, American Express was up for the year. Goldman Sachs down 15% for the year. And a lot of that was from the last 5 days and this month. But take a look at the non-U.S. banks. We got Barclays down 20%, Banco Santander down
20%. These are hugely beat up.
Yep. Banco Balboa Vizcaya, Argentina, 27%. Deutsche Bank down 41%.
Wow.
That's German's bank.
That's like a state bank.
Yeah.
That looks like a good bet.
Yeah, which one? All of them? All the above?
I'm seeing a lot of nice ones. I mean, I know these banks. Santander's, I think, the big bank in Brazil. There used to be all kinds of banks down there that were doing crazy stuff that was pretty advanced. A lot of people believe that the best banking practices are in Brazil, despite the fact that half of them are corrupt.
I was just going to say that. And that the government overseeing them is corrupt.
Yeah, well, besides that,
though. Oh, aside from that. Yeah, okay, I understand.
Deutsche Bank looks like the winner if you're bottom feeding.
If you're bottom feeding. What you could do is see that last one on there, EUFN symbol? That's an ETF that holds European financial companies. So if you don't want to pick one.
I don't know. I just pick one or two.
All right, well, you got that for the game if you want. Remember, don't forget, we were short Deutsche Bank. We made some nice money on that.
Yes, we were short Deutsche Bank, but now I'm looking at it going, oh, man, maybe now's not the time.
Okay, moving along. Drug companies will have to give list prices for their products in television ads under a new proposal from the Trump administration.
That's hilarious. I didn't know this. This is funny. I knew there was something going on. I heard about something going on. I didn't know that was this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, $20,000 for one pill. I'm sure they're going to love putting that out there.
Yep. The new rule, which is open for discussion, will affect any drug covered by Medicare or Medicaid. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announced the new proposal just hours after a lobby group that represented big drug companies said its members would start indirectly mentioning prices in their television ads, which is like, for more information about pricing, go to this website. You know, like, you know, website... drugsite.com/ripoff.
Yeah, that's no good. They're going to have to just put it in the ad.
Right. So they have to put it in there. It has to be, I guess, the list price. Now they're arguing, well, nobody pays list price. I'm thinking, how does anybody make a decision about anything with all of this going on? Now, here's something fascinating. First of all, I guess they're going to have to either put it on the end in some kind of text or those famous car commercials. You ever hear those with the guy at the end going, 31.
Yes.
You're like, oh, what did he say?
You can take anyone's voice with audacity and you can change the tempo and you can still make it intelligible.
So here's what's fascinating about this story. Who is this going to hurt? Somehow I don't think it's going to hurt the drug companies. The drug companies spend, $700 billion a year in total on television ads. And ads and television ads. You wonder. I don't know if you've watched CNN lately. Have you watched CNN lately?
I don't watch CNN too often.
It's the commercial news network.
Yeah, a lot of commercials.
It's unbearable. I like to flip around to different stations, right? Just to kind of like see, okay, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? And kind of somewhere in between, you kind of figure I get the straight story. It's intolerable. Anytime I click the buttons to go to CNN, there's a commercial on. And a lot of times it's a drug commercial. And I'm wondering to myself, I wonder, is there more to this than meets the eye? Is it an attack on the media? Because many of these drug companies will decide not to actually post commercials with this requirement. And therefore,
you think they might pull back their advertising and it would hurt a couple of significant players, mostly news, the nightly news on the networks and then CNN and people like that.
Is possible?
Yeah.
So,
I know the nightly news is loaded. I used to do a kind of a accounting for what ads were playing on the various networks some couple years ago. And there's like at least half to two thirds of the ads on the network nightly news are advertisements for drugs.
It's unbelievable. And these drugs, by the way, have serious price tags.
Yeah. Well, it's well, you can afford to advertise them.
It's amazing. It's amazing that somehow I'm going to think to myself, oh, doctor, I have this disease. You're suggesting this. Well, what about this other one I saw on TV?
That's what they're expecting. I think people do it.
I guess. And the doctors say, okay, that's a good idea.
Well, the good doctor doesn't.
Crazy. Fidelity Investments has launched a new company for its institutional clients that will trade and store digital assets such as Bitcoin. Fidelity Digital Asset Services LLC will electronically buy and sell cryptocurrencies on behalf of hedge funds, family offices, and other financial institutions. So I guess now this is going to enable somehow the addition of cryptocurrencies to investment advisors and hedge fund managers' portfolios for their clients.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know if that's good.
Yeah. All right. Something about it troubles me that everybody's trying to get on this action. Meanwhile, these cryptocurrencies can't get moving for anything. They're stuck.
Yeah.
Well, doghouse. A couple of things. Twitter. Have you been watching your Twitter feed lately?
I look at my Twitter feed daily.
What is going on? I don't know about you, but my feed is full of junk.
I haven't seen too much. I know what you're talking about, though. I've noticed this. You have a complaint about peers that you're following, people that you never chose to follow.
Yeah.
I think Twitter's been doing this because every once in a while I see somebody say, well, I don't remember ever wanting to follow this person. And I look at their page and it says I follow them. They may or may not follow me. Generally, they don't. These people generally don't. And I'm thinking, are they selling people fake follows or something? Is Twitter kind of fudging the system and making me follow people I don't intend to follow for a fee?
Maybe.
I've not heard anything about this, but I noticed the phenomenon.
I get things like, somebody else follows this. It says, John Jones follows this guy and he gives me some random thing that the guy wrote. In other words, one of the people that I follow this other person. So they put that somehow in my feed.
Well, they do. Yeah. Well, that's legal. It usually says so-and-so, if somebody that you follow retweeted somebody.
No, that I understand. I'm not talking about a retweet. I'm just talking about just a tweet that says, you know, they give it to me because the other person followed it. Like, maybe I'm interested.
Oh, well, I don't know if I've seen that much. I just see these fake, all of a sudden I'm following somebody I never heard of.
Yeah. It probably does something to give the exposure for the tweet itself when people look at their statistics on how many people it hit, or the exposure, or how many views, a better number.
I don't know. Maybe. The whole thing is fishy.
Yeah. Sears, is it going into bankruptcy, finally?
Yeah, finally.
I guess.
I think we tried to play that stock a few times.
Yeah. Well, the big question is, this is a way just to get creditors off their backs and keep this thing alive for a little bit longer. Stock was up 70% at one point today.
Wow.
So I think maybe you see this happen where there's a company that's going bankrupt and all of a sudden the stock rallies. You're like, who in their right mind is buying a stock with the understanding that the company is in the midst of an entire bankruptcy proceeding or going into it, well announced, et cetera. I think what happens there is that anybody that was short is saying, you know what? I better get out of this because otherwise I'm not going to be able to get my money. Because once it's delisted, once it's bankrupt,
yeah, you can't buy or sell it.
Yeah. So therefore, you can't get your money out of it.
Oh, yeah. I've never even thought of that phenomenon, but you're right. If it's down near the end, down to a penny, and it all of a sudden just disappears from all the markets, you can't finish your short sale.
I mean, you could do a worthless transaction on it, I suppose. Like, as in, if you owned it, you could do a worthless transaction somehow down the road, but it's cleaner just to cover it up and be done with it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And when's the last time you saw a Sears commercial?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, they don't have their tools anymore, right? Didn't they sell those off?
Yeah, they were idiots. I think I was listening to some analyst talking about this, and he said, well, you know, it's real funny because Sears just made a bunch of missteps. They had the best battery, the diehard. They had all these things that were going on. They had the best tools, Craftsman. They had, you know, good Kenmore products. They had a lot of good quality brands that they were selling that were owned by them. And he says that they just mismanaged all the brands. But more interesting is that they give up on the catalog business, which was pretty much a progenitor of what Amazon does. Yeah. And if they had just transitioned the catalog business to an online business, like Walmart kind of has done, they could survive the beatdown. But they were so stupid. I mean, this has to have been the biggest story of boneheaded CEOs and bad management decisions and board of directors that were just comprised of morons.
Well, remember, this was taken over as a primary investment of a hedge fund manager, famous guy, Eddie Lampert. So wonder how much, and it was a position, and it grew, and then it was all of a sudden all-encompassing, that Sears, Eddie Lampert, that's the same thing, one and the same. So you have to wonder how much maybe was taken out or bled out of the company, possibly, or
They sure didn't bleed out the catalog business. They sure didn't bleed. I mean, selling off Craftsman and kind of giving up on their other brand names, I don't see how you could have made any money doing that. I mean, it wasn't as if they were, like, you know, raping a valuable company of its brands and saying, here, let's spin this off and spin that off. I didn't see any evidence of that. Did you?
Well, obviously, something must have kept this hedge fund manager going with this. There must have been some incentive of something to keep him in this thing, knowing this was a ship that was just going down. It's not like it just, like you said, it's not like it just went down all of a sudden. It took years and years and years. So during that period, you have to wonder, why would somebody hold on to this except for the fact of his pride and ego?
Maybe it's taxes.
I don't know.
There's a fantastic tax scam going on here, a very good tax avoidance scheme.
Possibly.
I mean, that can happen.
Yeah. So is JCPenney next?
I don't see how they can avoid it. They have similar problems, I mean, except for the catalog business part of it. But they have too many stores in now declining malls. That was the third element this guy was talking about. Sears, you know, banked and becoming an anchor store for a lot of these big old fashioned malls, which are all going out of business or they're deteriorating because nobody wants to go to those things anymore. They prefer the open malls or the discount malls or the streets, which are the newest way to go, and it's pretty cool. You know, fake streets that you put in the city, which is actually just a mall. And so these malls, and Penny's was right with Sears as a partner.
Fake streets, I like that.
You've seen them, haven't you?
Yeah, I have seen them all over the place.
You know, they're all over the place.
Yeah, they made like
fake street.
Yeah, fake little towns, a couple of restaurants.
It's like a little town. It's a fake street. They got parking meters. You drive up and down. It's jumping. It's just fantastic. It's like, you know, it's a fake street, but it seems to work. It's old fashioned, but works.
Yep. Now, with just to get back to technology for a second, then we'll get on to some other things. But, you know, a phrase that I pick up these phrases every once in a while, right? You know, like constant currency or, you know, these various phrases enter into the vernacular and the conversation with investment folk. It also happens with technology companies or other companies for that matter. So, you know, it's things where you can see this.
It's insider language, so you know what you're talking about.
So in technology, this phrase that keeps on coming up recently with all these glitches and all that is, this issue only affected blank, blank number of people. This issue only affected, like, is that supposed to make me feel better? It only affected 29 million people, not 50 million people, the Facebook hack or the Facebook problem or, you know.
I never noticed this, but you're right. I've seen it a lot of times too.
Yeah, today there was a weird thing that happened on Twitter that was sending out some weird hashtag for people. It was like this hashtag that would, it was something about the way it was converted by your phone to read your tweets, and it just came, it was an invisible thing, but it came across as the tweet or as the notification. This long, you know, alphanumeric hashtag thing. And then Jack Dorsey came out with, you know, oh, we cleaned it up and all that, but this issue only affected a select group of people.
Interesting.
Yep. We got a list of pot stocks there. We got the donation. What do you want to talk about? Why don't you take the donation segment this month, this week, this day?
Well, I think that the show needs some support because we do pay a lot of money for some of our – well, we pay for the servers. We don't. I think the website's free, but we have to pay for some other things. It's an upkeep issue, and we also have those T-shirts, which we like to. We've only sold a few of, but you know, it'd be nice. And also, people seem to make some, or if they listen to the show at all, and this is just listening for the pure entertainment value, and never pay any attention to any of our ideas or analysis. Okay, but even so, if they're listening, you'd think that they would at least contribute something once in a while. And I think that's what we're trying to invite them to do. And it's over there on the. On the webpage, a very simple thing you can click on and just help with anything you've got.
Yep, that'd be
a
great thing.
I don't think it's a big deal.
Right. Do it now before the big crash comes. Before you're out of dough. You know, maybe it makes sense to do
so. Actually, when the crash comes, you might be surprised you get more interest because I think it was when I was writing for MarketWatch when the 2007, 2008, whenever that crash took place. And the numbers for the websites and all the writers went skyrocketing.
I was writing for Microsoft Money Central back then.
Yeah.
And we'd see the numbers and they were, you know, and we looked at the comparatives. They were out of control. So what did Microsoft do right after that? Shut it down.
Yeah, well, that's Microsoft's great wisdom. But generally speaking, people get more jacked up when there's a lot of uncertainty during a bull market. It's like you know, it's like throwing darts at a dartboard. You kind of make money doing anything. Yep. So they don't care so much.
Right. Put us on your Christmas list. As a matter of fact, I got an email from the gent who's sending you that whiskey, and it'll be there Thursday or Friday.
Good,
so you'll get that. But yeah, put us on your Christmas list. It's a part of the family. We give, you give. All right, let's see here. We have the close to the pin competition going on for advanced micro devices, which we extended till after the earnings, which I think is on the 23rd. But we have all of the the cutoff the cutoff date has happened, so you can't put in your guess right now. But most people, it's very interesting. A lot of people have a price target well below where it is. I guess everybody's betting.
Well, it's a stock that does that. I mean, traditionally.
Yeah.
I have watched AMD over the years, and I always kind of miss it. I see it when I see it bouncing around at 3. Yeah. It's always the time to buy it, you know. But it may stay there for a year sometimes, so it looks like dead money. Then all of a sudden, it triples.
Yeah.
And then it goes, and now it's very high. So I can imagine that most people thinking that it should be going down.
They definitely, the semiconductor, the chip, that business is very cyclical. Very cyclical.
Yeah, always has been.
So I need you to send me your price guess.
Yes, I have it ready to go.
Okay. Did you see the story with Elizabeth Warren? That she took a DNA test to confirm her date of embedded.
That she fell, as far as I'm concerned, this was a dumb idea.
Very dumb.
She fell. I mean, this is like Trump has pulled this stunt a number of times. And I think it's kind of weird that people keep falling for it. It's almost like Lucy in the football. He did it with Obama. He kept hounding him for his birth certificate. And Obama came up with some sort of a birth certificate, you know, just to shut him up when he could have just ignored him. In this case, she just makes a fool out of herself by falling for his, like, goading her. And then she came up with these numbers that don't make any sense anyway.
Right. There's this one whatever percentage, one small.
1/10^24, yeah. Right.
I mean, that could be all of us.
I think it is. I think most people are 1/500.
Right. So she has some – there was some discussion that – he challenged her. This is some of the news was saying that he challenged her to take a DNA test. And if she provided that she was of Native American descent, that he would pay her $1 million.
Yeah, that's a lie.
It's a lie. I listened to it. This is an absolute. This is the problem. People listen to things and they only hear what they want to hear. This is for everybody listening. You got to stop hearing what you want to hear and listen to what is said, which, by the way, sometimes may be stupid. It may be stupid what's being said. And you have to wake up to the fact that, well, maybe my guy's, you know, saying something stupid. But I listened to the discussion, the video, and he said it was a hypothetical thing. He said, if, this is what he said.
It would have to be during the debate.
Right, during the debate. If I was to debate her, maybe I would say, hey, I'll give you $1 million to prove through DNA that you're a part of, that's what it was. That's what he said. Now, I don't know if he said it another time, but what I saw was it. Yeah, that was it. And now happened is it reignited his Pocahontas knockdown.
Pocahontas. Yeah, no, she played the fool. So I don't know what she was thinking, but it's very disappointing for a lot of the Democrats because I know a lot of them love the idea of her running. She should have run instead of Hillary. She would have won because she had this thin skin thing she kept targeting Trump with, a couple of name-calling things she used to do that really, I think it really bugged him. And I think he's got her goat. So I think she's going to be not going to be as powerful a candidate.
Speaking about getting under his skin, you should definitely look at the Stormy Daniels banter back and forth now that the Trump, the judge ordered Stormy dismissal of the slander, defamation lawsuit against Trump and ordered Stormy Daniels to pay Trump's attorneys.
Yeah.
and then the follow-up from Trump was, okay, great. Now I can go after Horseface. and the third rate. And she came back with, you know, talking about the size of his wanker and, you know, talking about his proclivity towards bestiality that could be seen with his discussion of Horseface.
Yeah, this is the comedy act we now have. We're running the country.
Great stuff. Okay, now here's something that's interesting because actually, I think it was Adam asked me about this. And I think maybe you talked about this. Robinhood, you know the Robinhood app to buy stocks?
No, I don't know anything about this.
Basically, it's an app that makes it really easy to just click a button, I buy, click a button, I sell, and it's free. It's free to buy and sell stocks. Free, 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 free. Now, you're probably wondering, how the hell is that possible, right?
Yeah, how the hell is that possible? Yeah,
exactly. So, but nobody asked that question. Like, I always say, listen, the probability is you're probably not getting the best execution.
I'm sure you're not.
You know, maybe it's a little bit over the price. Maybe it's a little under the price. Maybe it's a little bit late. But, you know, if you're a long-term holder, who cares if you spend an extra 10 cents on a stock?
Right.
You know, but here's something that came out really interesting in the news. So Robinhood Markets, which is this Robinhood app, is a company that it built its origins on you know, this finance. They call it the counterculture, which is steal from the rich, which is kind of stupid because if this works, aren't you going to become rich one day and then...
Yeah, and have your money stolen.
Something about this bothers me, right? But anyway, the firm which offers no-fee stock trading is making almost half its revenue from one of the most controversial practices on Wall Street. So this thing is valued at about $5.5 billion. 40% of its revenue earlier this year came from selling its customers' orders to high-frequency trading firms or market makers like Citadel or Two Sigma Securities. So the selling for order flow, this is a, you know, order flow sales are done, but they're selling it to high frequency traders. In other words, those traders that are probably going to get ahead of your trade.
Yeah, that's what they do.
And then flip it and make a couple of pennies on you and then do that all day long. They're happy.
Huh.
You know?
Yeah.
But this is the thing that's interesting is now going back to this finance counterculture, stealing from the rich. This company is employing the strategy that is pretty much all about Wall Street. So this company is built on this anti-Wall Street, anti-rich, which is insane to me, by the way, that this company is built on, oh, it's the little guy that always gets screwed. And, you know, let's steal from the rich guys that really do this well. Again, the whole thing is a little bit ass backwards, but the message is obviously very well received.
Eh, it sounds like a promotion.
It is a promotion. It's what it is. But they're making all sorts of money. I mean, does anybody think that they're just doing this out of the goodness of their hearts? I don't think so.
Well.
A couple of final notes. This year, more than half of the United States has confirmed a possible cases of acute flaccid myelitis. Have you heard about this? AFM?
Yeah.
What's the story with this? This is the first time I heard about this.
Oh, it's been in the news for about a week or two. I don't know why it got in the news all of a sudden. It's like a new polio.
Yeah, it's like a
right?
New, yeah, it's a new polio disease that the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, which only releases confirmed numbers, says 16 states had 38 cases as of September 30th.
Yeah, small numbers if you think about it. You're more likely to get killed in your car going to the store.
Probably, but this, you know, it brings back the whole, like, you know, the whole thought to some people that were around back then of all these kids. And remember the crutches and the braces?
Yeah, the polio kids.
Yeah.
It's a Franklin Roosevelt had polio.
Yeah.
Right. At a later age, so it can happen at any age. I don't know. I just showed up on the news feeds, and then they have a bunch of cases. Apparently most of the cases are in Illinois, and they don't know. They just say, wash your hands, and it's really haven't got any help. I think it's a virus maybe.
Bonus question. Who came up with the cure for polio?
Well, two guys, Jonas Salk and a guy named Saban.
You're right. There you go. Nick Saban.
And now Saban is the coach of the Alabama team.
Right. Yeah. Final note, congratulations goes out to Elon Musk. The settlement with the SEC has finally been officially settled. And on that news, shares of Tesla were up 6%.
Man, that stock.
Still down a bit, still below 300.
Yeah, it's probably never going to. Well, maybe go up to 300 again, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It's supposed to take a dive next year.
So let me propose this question to you. What if you were to be writing for PC Magazine, would you have written that you did not write?
I forgot already.
You forgot that you didn't write?
Yeah.
Do you have something that you didn't write? Or you just totally... forgot.
Yeah, I was going to write about battery technology and some of the new inventions that are on top of the old inventions that may actually be some breakthroughs. We, you know, battery technology has not changed since the late 1800s.
Really?
Pretty much.
Well, standard, you got cars, batteries that run cars now. That's got to be something different.
No, they had, before the advent of cheap gasoline... and you can see many examples of this. A lot of the cars were either steam powered or battery powered in the early 1900s.
Hmm.
And then it took a while before the internal combustion engine took over the scene and knocked those other guys out of business. But there's tons of battery cars.
Really? I'd like to see one of those old ones.
Oh, they're cool looking.
You got to put those on, you know how you used to have. There's another thing you don't do anymore. You used to have thematic tweet weeks. You used to have your car week.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't really. I put a lot of effort into those themes, and it never really got me a lot more followers or anything. It just, I finally gave up on it. Although I might come up with something again. I have some. I'm collecting. This is probably before the No Agenda newsletter. I'm collecting anti-Trump cartoons.
Yo, that would be plentiful.
Yeah, when I thought of it, I said, "Holy mackerel! This is like a gold mine." It's like I'd say 2/3 of the cartoons that are running the newspapers today are anti-Trump.
Yeah. By the way, while we're on this talking about thematic tweets, I started following a new Twitter user that has just one theme.
Yeah.
It's called Toilets with Threatening Auras. At Scary Toilet. Let me tell you something. There's some funky toilets out there.
Wow.
Give us
an example of what you might see.
Let's see. This one is a car. This particular picture is a SUV that has a toilet seat that clips very well to one of the front tires that can be flipped down when you're in the desert to have a seat to go into a hole.
Wow.
Let's see another one here. Let's see this one. This is just a bathroom full of crazy stuff here. I'm
definitely following that.
Here's a bathroom that has just a picture of Obama looking down at you above the toilet.
That's not good. That would be frightening.
There's this crazy stuff on this Twitter feed. This crazy stuff.
Okay. I need more people to follow the real Dvorak on Twitter.
Yeah, that's a good point. The real Dvorak. Tell your friends, do me a favor, tweet out our Twitter handles, Andrew Horowitz and the real Dvorak, and tell all your friends, please, to follow us. That would make us happy. Let's get to the game. Let's get to the stock picks. Let's get to the game that we play each and every week. It's just a game. It's simple. It's some stock picks that two guys that are talking come up with for the fun of it. It's not a recommendation to buy, not a recommendation to sell. It has no meaning that anything other than our discussion here. If for whatever reason you decide, hey, you know what? That's a good idea. Do your own homework. Seek professional advice, because these are, you know, have the opportunity to make or lose money, and we don't take any responsibility for that. Horowitz Company clients, myself, or John C. Dvorak may own any of these stocks mentioned. We'll duly note that. You can follow all of our stock picks over on DH Unplugged, over on the weekly stock picks little page there, which gives you a live action working and functioning spreadsheet of what's in, what's out, what's up, what's down, etc.
All right. Back to the spreadsheet, wherever I put it. We have a couple of, we had a lot of stuff killed.
Yep.
If it doesn't open, I can't say what they are. Eagle Point went out, which was a thing that ended with a loss. It's our oldest one. The newest one, I just put these in last show, and I got kicked off of Adobe, which I still think is a good short, by the way. Cala Pharmaceuticals with a gain, so I don't know what happened there. We're still good for the Super Micro, the two of us. New Age Beverage got kicked out.
Unfortunately, because it's much higher. I think it was in the sevens.
Yeah, terrible. Well, it would be nice to pick it up at the 565 when I got kicked. Well, we got a couple of reds, but we got some big greens. We got Generac, your Generac thing is up to 14%. Next Innovation is 1%. Walgreens, my favorite company, 16% up. MBIA, your muni bonds short, is up 10%, which I think is a very interesting play. That was a good one.
Thank you.
And then that may be continue to be a good one. I'm going to have to look at that one myself. And then now you got a new one, United States Natural Gas Fund.
I'm thinking that there's the potential for the opportunity.
Bad winter, another bad winter.
Possibly.
So we blame everything on another bad winter.
Yep, we blame it on a bad winter. We have low inventories right now, and the opportunity for gas. Now, I own some futures in the natural gas area. Full disclosure, I got to put that down. Let's put that number one right there. I don't own this, but I own the futures. But I was just thinking that, you know, when we look at the chart, if it clears about 330 for natural gas, you could see a nice rip up to $4. So, and that's a pretty good number. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 60 cents on, you know, it's 10, 12, 15% up from here. So we're getting towards that time of year. We already saw snow on the ground in Colorado. I think it was 20 degrees the other day.
I think it's a good bet.
Yep.
This is a good one.
There you go.
I'm going with a Korean game maker.
Really?
Yeah, they have. It's a stock that is highly regarded by I think Morningstar and some other places, and they've got a. They're pretty much in the Asian gaming market, and they've moved a couple of their games onto the phone, and they think it's going to be very successful. It's big. It's a fairly big company called Gravity.
GVTY or something like that.
No, it's G. What is it? G R V Y.
Yeah, great. Oh yeah, I used to call it Gravy.
Gravy, yeah, Gravy. Okay.
That one has a lot of movement.
Yes, it does, and it's already moved. I was picking it at 17. It's already up to 20. Right. So I'm going to probably lose a little bit on that if it doesn't. It may just keep going. So I don't know. We'll just put it on there. We'll see what happens.
10% stop?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. Okay. Asian gaming is the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of companies like that. I mean, there's Huya and, you know, there's one other too.
I looked at all of them and I thought that this one looked to me at least there's a lot. In fact, when you look at the big list of gaming, holy mackerel, I didn't realize there was like 100 of them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's big. It's very popular over there.
And I'm thinking, why haven't they consolidated? That's another thing I'm wondering. But these guys look like they're actually a part of another operation that's, I don't know. It's a very strange stock business over in Asia, so I'm always rolling my eyes when I think about it. But I figure this might be a good one to put on the game.
All right, got it. Anything else?
No.
That's it. All right. Well, then we will reconvene at 2100 hours next week on Tuesday evening.
Sounds good.
All right. See you then.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.